Hi, and welcome to episode 20 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm your host, Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars and Stalkerville, and joining me to smack the piñata of small press comics are writer, artist, and creator of the superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And he was kicked out of the Spice Girls for being just too spicy. It's Tony Esmond.
Oh, I think I've just shit my pants.
That was another reason he was kicked out.
Shit, it affected my dancing. That's what I should actually the zig zigar was.
I'll tell you what you want, what you really, really want. New underwear. Oh, dear. Anyway. Yeah. Anyway, before we get too in-depth, we just want to let you know that as we're recording this pre-Thought Bubble. Even though you're hearing it after Thought Bubble. Yes, it's another timey-wimey episode. Are you ready to get your heads around that, fellas?
Yeah, I can deal with that. Seems a fairly easy concept to grasp.
Time and space is easy for Mr. Butcher.
Butcher's done you.
It's all relative.
Butcher, shit, you're the guest, I'm telling you.
Yes, as you can tell, we've got another guest on this week, but it's our first returning guest, isn't it?
Hey. Yep.
Yeah. So, as it's more of a topic show, we thought we'd drag someone in off the streets. We saw him busking on the side of the road, and we decided to take his guitar away, smash it so that he never did it again, and get him to talk to us for an hour and a half. You may know him as artist for Dynamite and things like, I don't know, little books like Planet Hulk and things like that. It's once again, it's our pleasure to welcome Mark Lamming to the show. Hello, Mark.
Oh, yeah, how you doing?
Mark. All right.
All right, Mark, welcome. Yeah, thanks. As always.
Sorry about breaking your guitar.
It's all right, there's lots. We're fine.
So Mark's going to be with us for the whole show and... we're just going to see how it goes. It's going to be a nice topic show this week. Very informative, I hope it is. So we'll see. Yep. But we'll see. Are any of our shows informative?
No.
The only information you get is never to talk to us.
You've probably just done, haven't you? Because it's been the weekend.
Oh, yes.
I've probably said something rude to you.
Yes.
And been annoying.
Yes.
I apologise in retrospect to anyone who's... been interfered with by Tony.
Mate, there's a few fucking names on that list, my friend. I'll tell you now.
Yeah, we should apologise to Emily already, shouldn't we?
You should be apologising to us, knowing what she's like.
Anyway, let's get on with the show. So, what have we been reading, doing, watching, etc., Mr. Esmond?
Yeah, I had a really good book this week to read, which I was really excited about. Occasionally what I try and do is I try and do a review on here, and then I do a separate review on Down the Tubes. But this book, I was reading it 2 days ago to review on the show tonight. And I was so enthused by it that I wrote a piece on it for Down the Tubes as well, because it's so good and it deserves that sort of wider recognition, you know. And mine is, once again from Avery Hill, it's I Love This Part, and it's created by Tilly Walden. We talked about her a while ago. I think Katrina Chapman talked about her when she was on. Does anyone remember?
Yes.
Yeah. I think it was Last Days of Summer. I'm blanking on the name of the last book, but yeah, something like that.
Yeah, Last Days of Summer was what we were talking about.
That's it, yeah. Yeah, and that's a great book. And this is, to be honest with you, this is even better. I prefer this to that one as well. It's a strange one. It's single pages. It's a comic, but each page is a single page with either various things on it, but a lot of sort of conversations and stuff like that. And it's about two girls growing up in America. And they're of school age, and they discover that they have a friendship, and they discover that there's possibly more to their friendship, and it's a very sort of touching, sort of heartwarming love story, really. But it's listen, I'm old now. I don't really understand children or young people at all. I know Dan's got quite a lot of contact with a lot of them on the train, but I don't. I don't get them at all. I find them mostly fucking annoying. I've got to be honest with you.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
I agree.
And even at conventions, young people, please don't talk to me because I do find you annoying at these things.
Right. I just want to say that anyone who listens to this show can come up and talk to me at any point.
Yeah. And what he'll do is he'll turn to me after you've left and go, I fucking hate that person.
Only if they're deaf.
Yeah, that's right. They can't hear. So he ain't care, is he? But occasionally someone like Tilly Walker comes along and sort of instills me with sort of I'm looking forward to what she's going to do, and I think there's a bit of a future to our little medium here. You know what I mean? To the industry. What she does is she someone banging things in the background.
Yeah, I've got fireworks going off.
I know you're excited about locally. Talking to us, Mark, but yeah. Jesus Christ. Calm yourself, man.
Can't help it, you know.
So what Tilly's done is she's taken a snapshot of various points in a sort of chronological sequence of these two girls' lives, and they're apart sometimes they're together, sometimes it's just pictures of the outside and what they're doing, and it she's trimmed down and cut down everything that is superfluous to this story, and she's included just the bare minimum of words. But what she's done it so well that it creates this history between the two girls that it's an up and down ride between when they're together and when they've fallen out and when they're back getting back together again and their first kiss and all this sort of thing. And it's incredibly well done. And it's all even more incredibly well done when you realise that Tilly is only 19. I apologise to her for saying this, because I'm sure everyone picks this little sort of nugget out and says, how does this girl do it? She's only 19. But it is absolutely incredible. It's literally one of my books of the year, genuinely.
Cool.
Wow.
And it was launched over the last weekend, or as we're recording it on the weekend coming up, and I got sent a preview copy by the guys at Avery Hill, and it is absolutely brilliant. So it's called I Love This Part, which is just a snatch of their conversation where they're talking about a song that they're both listening to on their headphones, you know, together. By Tilly Walden, published by Avery Hill. It's 68 pages. You can find Avery Hill at averyhillpublishing.com or follow them on Twitter at Avery Hill Pub. It's Avery Hill and then PUBL. Don't know why they did that. Or you can find tillywalden.com and have a look at some of her stuff on there. Absolutely gorgeous. And I can't wait to see what her next thing is going to be. And I think Avery Hill have really found a talent here, and hope they keep hold of her for a while.
I had a chance to see a couple of the pages, and it's a beautiful looking book.
Yeah.
I will say that.
Absolutely you know, so poignant, you know, and so touching it is. Really nice, and it's a subject I don't give two flying fucks about, you know, kids and relationships, and you know what I mean.
You don't care about children, or people, or relationships.
Yeah.
What do you care about, Tony?
I care about the drawings I do of you in my little pocketbook, and the poetry I write about Dan.
One day the two will intertwine into the. to the worst movie you've ever seen,
and the movies I get off Pornhub, and I put your faces on Photoshop.
Wow, I know you're lying there. Do you know how to use Photoshop?
I don't know what Photoshop is.
You think it's just a place you're going to get your photos developed, don't you?
Yeah, snap.
Photoshop's not coming up on the sat nav. Oh, Jesus.
Isn't that the thing that George Michael crashed into when he was a bit high in his car? That was Photoshop, wasn't it?
A Photoshop.
Ah, there you go. Yeah. All right, you people who live in your computers. I don't understand all that. Okay, yeah, but anyway, buy this book. It's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Best thing I've read for ages. Loved it. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, the art looks fab.
Oh, it's so nice. Yeah, yeah, so good. All right, next up, Dan. What about you, mate?
I was reading a comic that got sent in to us maybe a month ago. For the Demon Con, it actually released at Demon Con. So what was that? August.
God, I don't know. When was that? You were at that.
September.
August. Oh, September. it's Bertie the Bear issue 4 by Andy W. Clift. I think I've seen you read this on Down the Tubes. I had a quick read of your review and kind of agreed on
nice
all points.
One, mate. Good. Yeah.
So yes, the words and pictures by Andy W. Clift, letters by John Scrivens, and the guest cover artist on this was Daniel John Sandelberg. Not hating on this one. I don't think the cover does the comic justice.
Yeah.
I'm not saying the cover's rubbish. It's just not the right cover for that comic.
Mm-hmm. But, it's a shame because he had some great covers for the previous few issues that were all they fitted into a sort of series, you know, the way they were sort of cut and you know, and the title and everything. But yeah, it was a strange one, that one. I think he's a mate of his who said, "Can I do a cover?" And Andy's gone, "Yeah, okay."
Okay.
But it looks like one of those, to me, it looks like one of those things you get when you take your kids to sort of a cheap pub and they give you a colouring in thing.
Yeah,
and they have a lot of red crayons.
Yeah,
the drawing isn't too bad. The colouring, I found a bit off, to be fair.
It felt like it needed a kind of like a pulp Indiana Jones 1950s action cover. Do you know what I mean? To be fair, this is the first issue I've read, so I kind of got thrown in issue 4 of 4. So I had to kind of pick it up as it went along, but it's great. It's really good. It's the character Bertie. He's got wielding like an ancient dagger that he's picked up, and basically all these kind of bad guys and him and his mates have trying to get hold of it. And at the end of this part of this story, there's kind of this huge dimensional warps opening up, and it falls on him to kind of stop this huge demon thing coming through. It's really well done. Yeah, great art. The dialogue's nice and snappy. It's a lot of fun. It doesn't take itself too seriously, which I like stories where like, everyone acts normal, but the main hero is not human or wears a mask all the time. You know, like The Spirit. No one comments on the fact that he's walking around with a mask all the time, or Mr. Monster, and it's just like, yeah, that's what it is. A bit like Red Mask, I guess.
Yeah.
They don't mention it all the time, whereas if there was a guy walking around with an alien symbiote on your face...
Your face is weird.
You're like, ugh.
Well, they've mentioned it before in other things, so I think the people that know him don't need to mention it.
But... Yeah, you just kind of get on with it, and it's just like, yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah,
it's the same with the Bertie the Bear character. And he's going to be at Thought Bubble, Andy W. Clift. I think he does.
Or he would have been at
Thought Bubble.
He would have been.
He was!
Dan Butcher. Oh, this time thing's up. Easy.
Oh, he's a piece of piss. He was saying 5 minutes ago.
But if you didn't get a chance to pick up his comic at Thought Bubble, you can find it at bigbear.bigcartel.com or follow Andy on Twitter at Andy W. Clift.
I have to say, knowing Andy a bit, because he's a bit of a pal of ours, his style is so improved. I know he's a big fan of animation and Bruce Timm and all that sort of thing, and it's really coming through on his work. And you can see that on the Sergeant Steel, is it?
That's quality.
Yeah, he's really improved, and he posts a lot of... classic DC characters and stuff. He's done a good Flash Gordon recently as well. And he posted.
Yeah, I saw that. I like this is Flash Gordon.
Yeah, yeah. He's really improving. Yeah, he's also does quite a lot of flatting, doesn't he, for Marvel? I think.
Didn't he do some Punisher recently?
He did. Yeah, that's
he
right.
He did lots and lots of the Punisher.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No,
I was on a table next to him a couple of years ago at MCM. The MCM Expo. And he was doing a really good trade there. I looked at what he was doing and thought, this guy knows what he's doing. Because the table I was on didn't know what I was doing. You know, that's a contrast.
How many people were on that table, Dan?
This is turning into a classic Dan episode.
It was just like an absolute mess, the table. No offense to the guys running it, but just like there was so much stuff crammed on there. If you walked up to it, you had no idea what the hell was going on. It's just very amateurish. I know they've learned since then, but it wasn't good.
That's normally what the first con table's like, though, isn't it? You're just finding your feet.
Yeah, I think this was like their second or third, so they should have known, but they didn't.
Should we kill him?
Yeah, they don't listen to this podcast because.
Mr. Butcher is also a professional bridge burner. If anyone would like to hire him.
I know a good way of never having your mother-in-law around to Christmas dinner again.
Oh, no.
Go on.
Just buy her a razor.
Did your mother-in-law listen to this show?
God, no. I like my mother-in-law, so that's all right.
Oh, okay, good.
Well, that's right. I can edit that bit out.
Yeah.
He never does it. You're right, Dan. You said that last week. He never
does it. Oh, I can't.
No, it's
a lot
he
of
just
hard.
Edits it out and puts it in the end when I talk about
I know, things. I know. It's hard enough work talking to you people, let alone editing it up. Yes. So, which issue of Bertie Bear was it?
It was issue 4.
Brilliant.
I believe there's a second series coming out at some point.
Nice.
Cool.
So, nice. Yeah, read that.
Can't say fairer than that. Right, as for what I've been reading, I picked up a book, Hugo Boylan, who's an Irish sort of writer and editor etc. He sent me a book by one of his friends called Kerry Smith, who's also a letterer. She put together an anthology called Girls Like You, which is her first book. I'll just list off some of the names of the creators. Some of you out there might know some of them. Amanda Spitzner, Hannah Deacon, Debbie Jenkinson, Sarah Elliott, John Quigley, Brian Burke, Julie Nick, Rafa Lobosco, Chris O'Halloran. Oh, yeah, I think I got that right. Stephanie Reville, and a cover by Ruth Redmond. And Hugo also edited it.
Oh, now, Redders.
Oh, no, Ruth.
It's a wonderful cover. But yeah, basically, it's a collection of 8 short stories following the everyday lives of women dealing with strange and impossible situations, like stories of indecision, internet stalkers, office struggles, sisterhood, flying, rope, vanishing acts, and chocolate. And they describe it on the back as an eclectic deconstruction of modern day women's issues. Now, I just want to say this, right? One of the great things I've been lucky enough to experience since starting this show, apart from the company of Dan, of course. I'm not talking about Tony.
Oh, no. You're not going to go into a fucking diatribe about women's rights, are you?
No,
because if you do, I'm going to enjoy this.
No, yeah. I'm absolutely not, actually. Right. because who am I to talk about things like that? It's not my place to talk about things like that.
Okay.
But I've had the chance to expand what I read in the small press reading stuff. And stuff that I may not have heard of before, you know, those tables that I might have walked past in a convention. This might have been one of those books, you know, one of those I might have missed or just slipped through if I didn't think it was really aimed at me. And, you know, certainly with a title like Girls Like You, I might have stupidly thought, you know, what am I going to get out of this? But I am glad I gave this a shot because I absolutely loved this book. It's poetic in places, funny in others, scary, thought-provoking, moving. And the thought and the care for crafting each of the stories, whether it's from the style of the writing to the quality of the art, and the use of colour it's just fantastic. And the quality just sings through the whole book. I actually don't think I've read a book that took me on such a varied and interesting journey for a very long time. I rarely gush, on this show, but I have to. I must say, this was such a pleasant surprise, just to bolt out of the blue. And it's like Tony said the same about the book you read just a minute ago. This is definitely one of the best books I've read all year.
Okay, well, you sent it to me this morning. I haven't downloaded it yet. I will have a look.
Yeah. Each of the stories has a sort of cover page, and it's styled up separately. It's almost like you can. They would be separate little mini comics on their own, but it's a nice collection. But I liked all of them, and they're all very different, but a couple of my personal highlights was a story called Gravity, which was a poetic telling of someone reflecting on their life, someone who probably could have been considered a daydreamer, but they're still a wonderful yet quiet soul, and the trials and tribulations and the difficult times they experienced on their path to where they are today. And for me, it was just it was the perfect marriage of art, colour and narration, and the last panel, I defy anyone not to smile at it. You know, it just made, at the end of the story, it just made me feel good at the end of it. Cling, which is on the opposite scale of the spectrum, it's a simple yet terrifying tale of an internet stalker. So you go, you know, that's the, yeah, that's the range. Yeah, it could be about Tony, actually. it's probably semi-autobiographical about Tony, actually. But it's one of those, it's a tale of one of those people who add you on Facebook. I thankfully have never had this, but one of those people who add you on Facebook, and then before you know it, they won't leave you alone. You know, keep messaging you and sort of saying, you know, and when you don't reply to them, you know, why aren't you, you know, I'm just trying to be your friend. You know, I thought you were nice.
Well, I don't know. We've had a bit of that on the...
Yeah. Dan, just ignore those emails that Tony sends us.
Okay? I meant from a couple of creators. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not you, Mark. I swear.
No.
Damn, I thought it was.
Well, we talk about you off air. Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
But this story, it's not graphic or could be considered a strictly horror tale. But I will say that it's one of the creepiest shorts I've read in a while, and it's absolutely chilling. Because it's got one foot in the real world as well. You can imagine this has happened and people have this. It's quite scary. And another one, which was a tug of war, which was Tony will probably get a kick out of this one. It's Dreamlike.
like that.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so and on my notes here, yes, I've got notes this time. It's a dreamlike examination of the differing comments, opinions, and expectations that women get. Yeah.
Usually that, failed expectations in my case, to be fair, but.
That's the expectations you have. This is just a great sort of. It's very, once again, very different, and it's a tale that builds and builds from like individual pages focused on people to a it's an almost abstract climax that works really well on the page. I wouldn't, you know, you have to read it to sort of, you know, the words and the images just work together. So, and it's quite thought-provoking. I could go on about all the stories, but you just have to check them out for yourself.
To be fair, this is probably quite timely, mate. I mean, you and I both talked about what could be, you know, you could refer to as girls' comics, couldn't you, really?
Yeah.
I suppose. But with Misty, they've just announced that Misty's being released again, haven't they?
Okay.
For the first time in years, people have been after the trade of Misty, which is often considered to be like the sort of girls' comic equivalent of 2000 AD or Scream or something.
Yeah.
Like that, from the late 70s, early 80s. Is that right, Mark? I'm going to say
it
that.
It was early 80s, but it's absolutely fantastic. I wish I hadn't lost the copies I had of it.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to this.
I mean, when it comes to comics, it doesn't matter whether, you know, they're considered girls' comics or they're considered horror comics or they're considered any kind of comics. If it's a good story, exactly. And it captures you. It sings through, and that's what this book totally did. You know, it's Kerry's first outing as a solo writer. She's written all of the stories and got like these artists and stuff together. And apparently, she's quite. Hugo said she was quite nervous about putting this book out into the world. I think we've all been there, haven't we?
Like, yeah, we've all been there.
Yeah, when you spend all that time with the concepts in your head, and then you release it into the world, you just think, oh my god, you know, it's a nerve shredding experience, to say the least.
Yeah, it is. But I've had loads of that this week with all the preview copies I've been sent through, you know.
Yeah.
And then people are just so relieved sometimes when you say, no, it is good.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a relief. You don't realise sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. It's more, everyone's putting their heart and soul into these things, aren't they, really?
Yeah, You know, and their free time and, you know, this sort of thing.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, reviews and just people's opinions, they do, you know, they do mean something to... You know, you can't stick too much to reviews.
Yeah, but, they're bad.
Yeah. I never talk about them, Tony.
It's all opinion and subjective, isn't it, reviews? Like, what one person would love, another person will despise. And that's
my humble opinion, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Then that's what a reviewer tries to do. They just try to articulate what they think the book is being aimed at, you know?
And that's what we do on this, you know, isn't it, really? You know, we talk about books that we've got a kick out of. We're not saying this is a great book, this isn't a great book, you know. That's you know, and if people want to check these books out, and if they disagree with us, well, that's fair enough, but at least you've checked the books out.
The biggest compliment I ever get is that you understood what I was going for.
Yeah.
You know, that's the biggest compliment. You know, I got that back from someone today, and they said, look, you got a handle on exactly what we were going for, and I thought, oh, yeah, that made my day, just that. Yeah. That's all we can do, you know.
Yeah.
There's been a couple of tweets where people have said they've really enjoyed kind of picking up books that have been recommended.
Yeah, I've had a couple last few days. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice.
And we truly, I mean, obviously the creators appreciate it as well. But it's
brilliant, yeah. Yeah, that's what we're here for, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, when we're talking about these books, we're not just shilling them. For, you know, people aren't paying us to say these things.
I wish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Old Paul Quote Butcher strikes again.
Yeah.
The Time Lord.
We'll get on to comics journalists becoming comics professionals soon, I think, won't we? Yeah, that's coming up in a minute.
But back to girls like you. You know, Kerry, if you're worried about anything, I think you absolutely nailed it with this book, and it's like it's fantastic.
Will we have met her yesterday?
We might have met her. Yeah.
Yesterday, or
the day before? Yeah. I'm sure she'll be there with Hugo. This book will be there. On a side note, Kerry actually lettered the whole thing as well, because she's a letterer. Okay. She's got a lettering blog and stuff, so you know. And I must say, she took great care in doing so that benefited each story. It's not the same, you know, just because it's the same letterer, every story is different. So she's there's just thought that's gone into the way each one is lettered.
And, is it digital or hand? Led, you know.
I would say most of it's digital, but with some of the stories, they've got quite a different sort of style to them, so it's hard to really say. I don't think Not Enough is made of the importance of lettering and how flexible letters have to be based on an individual story. You know, you can't just have the same sort of lettering for for everything you do, I don't think. No. And this is definitely a showcase of that. It's a 108-page book. So you're getting a bang for your buck.
Yeah.
And it launched at Thought Bubble. But you will be able to get it digitally from Kerry's lettering blog, which is vicariouslettering.com. I would try and spell it, but I'll probably muck it up. So I'm going to put it in the show notes. vicariouslettering.com. That's Vicarious with a K as well. They're planning to roll it out into some indie comic shops too. But what I'd say is just follow Kerry and Hugo to find out more. You can follow Kerry Smith at Pocket Kerry and Hugo Boylan at Hugo Boylan.
Do you know where they're from, Twitter. Are they London? Or are
they're
they...
Dublin.
They're where, sorry?
Dublin. They're Irish creators. I met them at Thought Bubble last year. We were both in the teepee and like got to know them and stuff. But they put out some like great books. So definitely check them out. You know, because this book is, you know, I love it. It's got rereadability for me as well. You know, wonderful stuff. Anyway,
awesome.
Have I finished my fawning over this?
Yeah, right there.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Thanks.
You've actually made me want to buy it, so that's good. There you
Yay!
Go.
Yay! Kerry, I'm so sorry for whatever he said.
I'll be approaching your table. I'll be with Emily. We can do a recording thing, can't we?
Oh, that'd be quite cool. Yeah. What we're going to try and do, folks, is when we go to Thought Bubble, we're going to try and get some audio. And if we get enough decent stuff, that'll either be in a show.
That's not going to happen.
It'll either be in a show, or if by some miracle we get loads of it.
I'll be in the car with Harrow on the way up, so we'll get some with him. He likes that.
We might do a special.
He's cosplaying again, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
What, as someone who doesn't want to be around you? Anyway, Mark, enough of that. What about you? What have you been reading? What do you want to talk about?
Today I read a new book from Boom called Last Sons of America. I mean, I was initially interested in seeing what this was about because it was edited by one of the guys that I used to work with there, but it's written by Philip Kennedy Johnson and illustrated by Matthew Dow Smith, and I suppose it's kind of similar to Children of Men in that it's near future and something's happened in America where there's been an agent released which has stopped people being able to have children. The story picks up with two brokers going to South America to try and get children from poor families in South America, to take out onto the open market in the US. And it follows these two brothers as they go around trying to pick up a child or two to bring back for adoption. It's quite dark, but it's a really good read.
Okay. That sounds like a dark subject matter, indeed.
Yeah, I do like Children of Men, actually. I really like it.
Yeah, I really like
it. I think if you enjoyed that, you'll really like this. The two brothers have a really interesting relationship, and there's all sorts of sort of underworld stuff going on in the town they're in the non-disclosed country that they're in South America. And there's all sorts of shenanigans. The artwork's fantastic. Matthew Dow Smith, I suppose, closest I would say his work looks like is Paul Azaceta, who does Outcast.
That kind
of style. Or maybe John Paul Leon. So it's quite very grounded, but perfect for the book. Mm. And the dialogue's great and natural. You know, it's a really good read.
Nice
one. That sounds really good.
That today, I must be. I went to the comic shop this afternoon, so I might try and get that then. Yeah,
yeah. Good. It's well worth picking up. I think it will definitely be a good trade.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Boom have put out some great stuff recently as well. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah, they're really consistent. I think that's what's great about Boom. But you know, Eric, I think has got a really good eye for good stories and tends to get interesting people sort of. In to work on the books that he edits.
Yeah.
The Rinse was Boom, wasn't it, Mark?
It was, yeah.
Yeah. Was he the same editor as you had when you did The Rinse? Or?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, still haven't heard anything more about that going to TV, but apparently it is, so be interested to see what happens with that one.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. We'll probably want to fly us three out to LA, will you? Or is that the plan? Or
Or like Entourage.
Yeah.
God. Which one of us is the Matt Dillon character?
What's the one? It's fucking me, isn't it? Shut up. Of course it is.
No, you're the one called Turtle. I can't believe...
I like Turtle. He gets off with that cage fighter woman in the movie, doesn't he?
Oh, I tell you what, Entourage can fuck off.
You're angry today. You've been angry all day.
I'm tired, man. No, well, I did used to watch Entourage, but, you know... And then
I quite like the movie.
Then I just... What?
I quite like the movie. I watched it on the plane. It was all right.
Okay.
I was going to talk about Grant Morrison's new book with Boom, but I'm not sure about it.
Right.
Really?
No.
That was out today, did it? Or
That was out last week. That's his Santa Claus book, Claus, which has got beautiful artwork by Dan Mora, but he's almost trying too hard to do a book that's all ages, and it comes across a bit like, you know, almost a bit too knowing and a bit too, I'm telling you a story.
Okay. Yeah. So I thought it was meant to be a bit violent. From the promo images I saw, I thought it was going to be a bit sort of bloody, like, you know.
There is that in there, but it, you know, dialogue-wise, it comes over a bit Shrek, if you know what I mean.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I get you.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, telling the gods. You know, it's like we're in storybook land kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
I've got an all-ages comic to talk about at the end.
Oh, cool. Have you?
No.
When do you ever have that?
If that's the one we were discussing earlier, then that's not all ages at all.
I'm trying to keep the kids listening, Mark. What are you doing?
Why would you do that? You said you hated them earlier.
Oh, yeah, I do. Yeah.
We do have an explicit thing on our iTunes thing, don't we?
I made sure to put that in, you know, after the whole Peachstone incident. I don't think we could, you know, our bed was made.
Yeah, set the stool out there. Just have a peach down on the t-shirt with like merchandising. There you go.
I'm getting Laura a Shush Now Vince t-shirt for Christmas. I'll tell you that now.
Dear God.
Awesome.
The go merchandising on. Capabilities for this show are amazing, but at the same time, all of them are all based around something insulting in some way.
Works for me.
Anyway, cool. So yeah, nice book, Mark. I'll definitely get to check that one out. Right, this show, rather, I mean, Mark's been on before, so we don't need to talk to him for the next like an hour or so, do we? Should we just leave him in the corner?
Yeah, sounds about right.
I'm going to play some violins at that moment when that plays.
Oh, you'll edit that in, like you always do all your editing. Yeah. Oh, I'm busy, I'm editing it. Yeah,
all right. I imagine this Vince sits down and goes, oh, I've got to edit all this, and then just thinks, ah, fuck this, and just presses upload.
You literally said that to me earlier, like this week, you went, I was going to add something at the end after credits, but I couldn't be arsed.
It was a long show last time.
It was quite long.
So, and thank you for all those people who listened to it and got a kick out of it. It was, I'm glad you all enjoyed it. And also quite a few people have checked out Dan Harris's Kickstarter, which is still going. So,
that's good.
Yeah, during investigations, they've had a successful first couple of days, so it's well worth checking out.
Oh, cool. Excellent.
There's another pin for him. Anyway, a lot of...
I said that Assault on Fortress Doom. I can't remember the fucking title, but that's doing pretty well as well. We gave that a shout out last week, so carry on.
They're funded, aren't they? But they're
well. He emailed me today asking that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well worth checking out. Yeah, Dan was right. The video is definitely quality. Dan was right. That's all he wants to hear, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a t-shirt. Right, moving on.
Ever since we started this show, there's been a lot of people who listen to us who want to get into comics, and for some reason they glean some sort of information from whatever we talk about. So I thought it'd be a good idea to talk about a topic this week, and I wanted to discuss getting started in comic books. There's a lot of people out there, and I know because I did this for years and years, who always wanted to make comics or you know, finally get their foot in the small press or whatever. I'm not talking about you make a comic and all of a sudden you're working for Marvel, just making any kind of story in general. How do you go about it? Because some people have all these stories, but then there's so much to do, isn't there, when it comes to making a comic? So
yeah,
what advice would you have for, you know, anyone who wants to get started making comics?
Well, I don't know.
Well, it's been a wonderful show, folks. See you next week.
I don't know if it's worth it. I mean, Mark, how did you? I mean, I think the world's changed quite a lot, hasn't it? I mean, it used to be, to be honest, a lot harder.
Everything ran on gas.
Sorry?
Everything ran on gas.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
Yes.
There was no computers, which I like.
Yeah. Well, no, we had wind up computers then.
Yeah. And I played that game. What's it called? Bong, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't Bong. That was a different game you played.
I mean, to be fair, back then it was a lot more difficult to make a comic because printing wasn't as available. Nobody really knew what they were doing.
I mean, it was kind of an arcane art getting yourself published books done. I mean, it was just as easy to get stuff photocopied as it is today, you know, if you want to do mini comics. But if you wanted to step up, you know, you actually needed to know what you were talking about. It was in regards to sort of talking to printers and about getting films made for separation and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, so you really needed to sort of go and talk to your printer. Now you just send them a PDF and they print the thing out. So
Although saying that, a lot of people don't know enough about sending stuff to printers.
No,
And I'm sure printers will, they're probably applauding now as I say that. And thank you very much for listening to this show. But that's one of the things you need to know. I mean, to make the comic is one thing, but then to know how to get the comic out in the best possible quality it can be is completely different, you know. And I see a lot of, like, you do see books where people don't take into account bleed area or type area. And I might be saying these things, and people say, what is bleed area? What is type area? I mean, I know we all work in these creative arts. I know me and Dan, we both work as designers and stuff. So we have to deal with this on a day-to-day basis. But most of the people out there who are writing these stories or creating this artwork, they don't do that. They're doing, you know, they don't have the foot in the door. They don't, they're not messing about with Photoshop all the time. So,
but do you know what? Putting my old teacher hat on.
Yes, Mr. Lamming.
Yeah, you see, this is people not doing the research.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of feel that, you know, if you want to do anything well, you should research it. You should look into it. You should know what, you know, talk to a printer before you even get close to printing. Find out what they need. You know, talk to them about paper stock. Go and visit them, you know, find out what the paper stock would be like. You know, find out some of the process. Then you have a better idea about, you know, when you should be chasing them because the book's late, you know, you know, and all that sort of stuff, you know.
I mean, with social media as well,
to do this stuff.
Yeah. With social media and the internet generally, there all these answers that are literally at your fingertips.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Absolutely. Yeah. So easily, it shouldn't really be an excuse.
Yeah.
But,
and especially when it comes to printers, like, for instance, they're willing to talk about it because they want your return business, you know, for your second printing, for your third printing. So ask them as much, and they certainly want it to be easy once it gets to them. Who wants to be going backwards and forwards with different PDFs, or you need to, you know, you haven't put bleed on it, you haven't done this, you know. Like Mike said, do your research and, like, you know, find out about what's the best thing to give a printer.
I mean, I was also mentioned about asking for print proofs, because one of the issues I kind of have to deal with in my job is color calibration. Mm. And what kind of will look good on your iPad that you've PDF'd at home or made a JPEG, when that comes out print, the color control is completely off, and it could come out looking really, really dark that you can barely see anything that happens in the panels. And that's happened to me. I've had stuff printed and it looked fine on screen, and then I've got the print back and it's like, bloody hell, it's absolutely black, and you've had to kind of adjust it accordingly.
Yeah, you got to keep your eye on the major issues. I mean, you can't be too...
No.
Because if you've got like 200 copies of something, trust me, issue one's going to look slightly different from than issue 200. It's just the nature of the print as these things go through. But yeah, definitely, you still want the best thing you can possibly get.
But say, like someone said, right, I've got an idea for a comic, or I want to get into comics,
yeah,
but didn't really know where to begin. Where would we, or one would advise them to get into that? Do you know what I mean?
I think it stems with, it stems with what kind of comic they want to make, because I think that's the first question. Do you want to be a web comic, or do you want a hard copy printed comic in your hand? You know, because they are different. I mean, as you know, Dan, they're different kind of beasts, aren't they?
Mm.
What would you say, Tony?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, one thing I'd be interested in to know is people who've sort of started off before web. I mean, how did you break in, Mark? What was your sort of story around it all?
Well, I mean, I was really lucky. No, not at all. I mean, I did a graphic novel when I was in my third year at college, and I was really lucky that David Thorpe, who was writing or had written Captain Britain, happened to come by the show, picked up my business card and phoned me up the next day, and I was then suddenly working on a book.
Right.
You know, so I was really lucky in that regard. I mean, the book itself didn't then happen, because the publisher, which I think it was Eclipse at the time, was just about to go bust. So it was, you know, it was then 3 months later that I'd managed to get introduced to Peter Hogan, who was editing Revolver for Fleetway at the time. And I then got work with him. But that was kind of how I broke in. But then work dried up really, really quickly as the industry in the UK suddenly contracted. So I then started self-publishing. So it was my way in that first time.
Right.
But you know, in terms of breaking into the big industry, it's always been taking portfolios around, getting to meet editors, getting work in front of people, you know, which is very different to the sort of putting a comic book out, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would a kind of, say you had an artist who basically just sat home drawing pinups, doing his own pages, would that look better than someone who'd gone out and met other writers and worked on projects that had been published? Because I would have thought that the second option would have looked more attractive to an editor. Do you know what I mean?
It really depends what they're looking for. I mean, they want, it depends, you know, if you're talking about Marvel, they want to have seen that you've worked for Dark Horse.
Okay.
I mean, which is bizarre, because I got into DC just through having self-published, but I don't think that works the same way anymore.
Yeah.
I think they want to see like a book with Boom or a book with Dynamite or Dark Horse or whoever they think is their next springboard.
And working back from that, Dark Horse and Dynamite and Boom and all these people, they want to see the small press book you've put out, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. You know? So, yeah.
I mean, as a sort of creator, and I think as we go through this show, we meet different people. You can spot the people who are right, who are working it right. You know, you can spot the people who are working hard, having an idea, putting a good first issue out. You know, I mean, we talked about Sam Reed a few weeks ago, didn't we, Vincent?
Yeah.
The thing that we immediately agreed on is this looks like the quality of an image book.
Yeah.
And he's putting out a book pretty much himself. That he's creating, and it's got that quality to it. So that's like a business card immediately.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whole thing.
Yeah. But the thing is, you can't then put that out and then expect them to come to you.
Yeah.
Right.
No. You still need to be completely proactive. And if all you want to do is put out a small press book, then that's fine. You're in the right place. But if you want to get that book under their nose, don't expect them to have found it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need to go and find these people and be a squeaky door, you know, be the person that irritates them slightly and get the portfolio under their nose, you know.
Yeah.
You know, there are certain editors that I may have seen five or six times, you know, and you go back and you take notes from what they're saying to you, and then you put those into place and then see them again, you know.
I mean, I think the internet has presented, We all see it as a fan now. We see the progress of people that we never saw before, didn't we?
Mm, yeah.
I was thinking about is it Ryan K. Lindsay the other day?
Yes.
I was chatting to him on Twitter. And he's gone from putting out digital books to putting out physical books to now working for Dark Horse. And he's done it because he's very active, he's very personable, and he's a hard-working and a good writer. You know, and you can see the progress. Yeah,
and he's still teaching.
Yeah, wow. And he's a primary school teacher, I think, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did not know that. Bloody hell.
Yeah. Yeah, so and he's putting out stuff constantly that's quality, and it's getting the attention, but he has to have, he also very wisely, because he's obviously marketing himself, has got a Twitter and a social media presence, you know?
Yeah.
Hmm. And is a super nice guy, which goes a long way, you know?
There's not enough can be said about this. I'm going to put it quite simply, Tony said it before, Dan said it before, don't be a dick.
I think you have to realize that your Twitter now, if you're a professional and you or you even want to be a professional in the comic industry, your Twitter has to be professional. You can't go on about, you know, oh, I've got a sore throat today, I can't work, or you can't go on about how much you ate something, you know. You've got to be a reasonably positive person on there. Otherwise, you know, editors are going to see you and they're going to say all he does is like moan about, you know, it's raining again, or I can't go out the house.
I couldn't agree more. Even from my point of view, I'm getting to the point with certain people, it's like, you know, and you're wondering why you're not getting work. You know,
there are a select few, and we're talking like, you know, the mega big names that have been in it for years and years, you know, that they can probably get
away with it.
They can get away with it.
I'm not going to say they're allowed to do it, because they can get away with it because they've got that name. And we all know who we're talking about on there, don't we? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess at some point they have to be careful, because their Twitter account can become a liability. I mean, all they've got to do is say the wrong thing, and then wham, they've got like the mob
outrage.
Outrage.
Well, you've only got to look at, I mean, I really like listening to Rob Liefeld, and I like following him on Twitter. And since I've heard him on, say, 11 o'clock comics, I've really warmed to the guy. Do you know what I mean? But there was a little period where he had a little bit of an outrage, a little bit of flash in the pan, you know, he's just having a bad day. And it just came out as this huge sort of stream.
I remember that, and it was like, I thought, is this a man having a meltdown? Like, a quite public sort of meltdown.
And where it used to be, you'd chat with someone at a convention, or, you know, you'd meet your mates, or you'd chat down the phone at an editor.
Who are you shouting
mostly
at?
Mostly you. But you know what I mean? But as a creator, but now, you know, having an argument, you know, with your editor at, you know, at the Marvel offices, now it's so public, isn't it? You know?
So you
have to be really careful. And I think that's got to be taken into account when you're planning your professional approach to being in comics. You know, don't moan online. Don't constantly moan online. Don't slag people off. You know, be careful who you speak to. You know,
cultivate relationships as well.
Totally. And
don't
remember,
be forced about it, you know.
Don't slag off other people's work. Don't, because everybody is best mates with that person you've just slagged off.
Yeah.
You know. That's the way to think about it, you know. Keep those thoughts to yourself.
Yeah,
Tony.
To be honest, completely honest and forthright about it all, I deleted a tweet I put out this morning, you know, because I put it out and I thought, oh no, I shouldn't have put that out. And it was about me not being credited on something I wrote. And I thought, and I put this thing out, you know, it's 5 o'clock this morning, and I put out, oh, that was nice getting credited on that, not, or something like that. And I thought, nah, it's too negative, and I deleted it.
Yeah, what good can come of it?
Doing that. Exactly right. Yeah, and we all have those little moments. And I'm not a professional, I'm just a fan. Do you know what I mean? But I still think of it, you know.
Well, at the end of the day, like, when, especially like when you're at a convention, for instance, whether you're a professional or whether you're a small press, whether you're a fan, we're in this little bubble, right? Imagine you're in a little pocket. If you throw a hand grenade in that, there's no way you can really get away from it.
It's like that old phrase, pot will eat itself. You know, we're such a little small pool of people. You know, most comic creators are fans, and they've been fans before this. They became comic creators.
Yeah.
And if we keep, like, biting each other on the arse, we will eat ourselves.
Yeah.
We will completely destroy ourselves. Yeah. You know?
And you know, we started this show to, like, shout about the small press, because there's so many fantastic people out there. And you realise as soon as you get to know them, oh my God, everyone knows each other, and they're always helping out and promoting each other. I mean, the amount of times I've seen someone do a print or a variant cover for someone else's comic, and I didn't even realize that they knew each other.
Yeah,
you know, that sort of
stuff. We're a real small pool, mate. We've only got how many people we had on? We had it last week, didn't we? We were talking about, and he said, oh, I did a pin up for that.
Yeah,
none of us knew, you know, didn't even know they knew each other.
And also, that's what happens if you cultivate the relationships. People are going to ask you to do work for them.
Yeah,
you know, people are going to come to you and sort of say, I really love your work. Do you want to do a variant cover? Or I've got a Kickstarter and I've got some pin-up. I mean, I was very lucky to be asked to do some pin-ups recently. And that's purely, you know, that was from three different people that didn't know each other, you know. And
to me, to me, you do that. You make a name for yourself. You're the good guy. You know, you've got a bit of talent about you as a creator of some kind, you know, whether it be a writer or an artist. So you do stuff for people, and then the next offer will be, oh, I'll pay you for that.
Yeah.
You know, there's no sort of watershed moment where you suddenly go from being like an indie small press, you know, making comics in your bedroom to being this sort of superstar. It's a sort of slow process. You know, everyone's paid their dues and everyone's worked hard.
Yeah. And,
you know,
and there also comes a point where the longer you've been doing it, the better you are at it. So there comes a point where, you know, I'm not doing this for free anymore because I'm better and it takes
longer.
You're good
enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I had a fascinating conversation with Mike Stock, works with Mike Garley and Joshua on the Kill Screen. Letters, a lot of small press stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's gotten to the point now where his, you know, he was talking about rates. I mean, we didn't discuss any numbers, of course, but, he's gotten better over the years. So his rates are naturally going up. Where some people, especially with letters as well, some people think they can just do it. Whereas you can't, you know, and if you want quality and like just something like designing a logo, you may get that logo, but someone's worked for hours to get that right.
But to me, on the subject of breaking in, the way that the industry, or that I understand that I'm not an insider, but the way I understand it is it's become so diverse in a way that you can get paid for your product these days. You know, it used to be that you go from making small press comics, which none of us made any money off. We got them printed at a little, I went to Catford Print and got mine printed, and I sold them at comic conventions, and I never made my money back. And then suddenly Kickstarter appeared, so people are doing Kickstarters. Then suddenly Kickstarters appeared where the artists and the writers were getting paid for what they did. You know, are they then a professional? Are they then in the industry? I don't know. It's questionable, isn't it? You know?
It's a difficult one, that one, because, you know, you could say the same thing about webcomics when they produce collections. You know, it's... It's that interesting thing about the way the industry has changed. It's like, just because we don't see it in a comic shop doesn't mean you're not mainstream or possibly even more mainstream than the comics that you see in Forbidden Planet or your choice of comic shop.
We were talking about this recently, Mark, weren't we? Where there's a lot of kids who all they do is read web comics.
Yeah.
We were talking about, you know, there's a 50-50 split between male and females reading comics, even though if you go in a comic shop, it's going to be 70% men probably.
Yeah.
Because a lot of women perhaps might read web comics, or certainly younger people are reading web comics and not going in a comic shop. So, you know, and these web comics, it's like YouTube video bloggers and all these sort of people. Mm. They're incredibly popular, but we don't always see it because we're in by Marvel and DC, you know.
I know I've certainly discovered some amazing ones since starting the show. Mm. I mean, you know, just keeping your eye out. You know, but like everything, you know, because everyone can do it now, you have to, you know, it's a bit harder to find the gems sometimes.
Quality always will come to the top, you know.
Yeah.
But the thing I found really refreshing, especially at the last few conventions I did, and it was really noticeable at Nottingham, was that kids don't give two shits whether or not it's Marvel, DC, or a small publisher anymore.
Mm. Yeah.
They're just interested in a comic that interests them. They don't have the brand loyalty that we used to. You know, it's like, oh, I'm not looking at that. That's by, you know, Blast Off Comics. You know, they're crap. You know, they're not Marvel and DC. You know, they used to do the small press things when you do UCAC or Bristol. Mm. You're almost in a ghetto sitting there going, oh, well, no one's going to come over here and I might sell five books. Whereas you're more likely to do better at your table with an interesting, brightly coloured, lovely-looking comic book.
Yeah.
Would you say that's because of stuff, the way it's come on, like the quality of small press has taken leaps and bounds?
It's definitely helped.
When I used to go to like the UKCAC back in the day, I can remember buying like pieces of A4 stapled together and stuff. And now you're getting like these kind of glossy books that are just...
Yeah. I'd even say in the last 2 or 3 years it's really improved.
Mm.
Genuinely.
Yeah, I think there's that, but I think also it's that thing of the kids themselves that are buying the comic books don't care that it's two guys that put it together in their front room.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah, they are just interested in something that looks cool.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the internet almost, and the availability of printing has produced almost a DIY culture. Yeah. You know, that's coming
absolutely
back.
And I think it's completely divorced from what we see happening in comic book shops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the industry that we see, you know, I think, you know, you have your mainstream culture, which is everything that isn't comic book shops. And that seems to be a lot more interesting and a lot more varied and accepting compared to the you know the 25 to 55 year olds that go into a comic book shop.
Yeah.
And the great thing, like in this day and age, there's so many conventions everywhere. So, and there's always going to be small press people, and we're not scary people. So, you know, and they like. Before I jumped headfirst into it, and I did literally jump headfirst. Of course, this was after about 15 years of saying I want to make a comic book, and then never getting off my arse and doing it, or never having faith in my, you know, ideas. They were never good enough, if you know what I mean. Yeah. Whenever I went to shows, I would look at what other people did, and I would ask them questions. You know, even questions are like, you know, oh, who did you? You know, if this is a nice book, who did you use to print it? You know, and ask the next person the same question, you know, and then if the same name comes up a few times, you start thinking, right, I'm going to make a note of that because that'll be the person that I'll get a quote from or something like that.
It's interesting. You know, I'm wondering if we're almost two industries now. A friend of mine who's come into or has been to Thought Bubble with me, he said to me, we're talking about what time we're going to eat. And he said, this is a sort of arty comic festival. It's not like proper comics, is it? And I'd say to him, no, it's both. You know, it's both the things there. Yeah. And I wonder if we're almost becoming, are we becoming two comic industries? I don't know.
I would say
the small press is certainly a thing that some people are just into. They're just into that now, aren't they?
I would say there's a third with web comics. I mean, there's the web comic chat, there's the European one and an American one. And if you go into that, the amount of creators involved in that, and that's not even scratching the readers. It's just almost intimidating the amount of people doing it. There's so many.
Yeah, and I never saw it till I started this show. Very few webcomics did I ever read, you know.
Yeah, and now look at you. Yeah. Dan, when you we haven't started again. You don't have
to do a sip of coffee and sits up.
Hopefully dressed. when you started Vanguard, this is something we haven't asked you actually, like, what made you go in the webcomic route? How did that come about? What, you know, rather than going for like, you know, just having print copies, what made you go webcomics?
Well, when I came out of university, I'd studied illustration and design, and then I'd always been into comics, but kind of let the comic stuff lapse. So I started going on to like Pencil Jack and stuff like that, trying to get my abilities up. And to see, when you look at the kind of playing field, especially the guys on Pencil Jack and like digital Wearing, like the skill level is unbelievable. So I thought I want to get back into doing comics and I want to do my own comic, but I'm not good enough at the moment. So I looked for a writer who was doing a comic and wanted an artist, and I did 5 issues of a comic with that guy. And once I'd done them, I was like, right, I can do mine now. And I just did it on, started publishing Vanguard on Drunk Duck because it was free.
Yeah, right.
There's a readerships there. I will start on there. This doesn't cost me anything. Yeah. And I was just doing the story for fun, which I do now, really. And I always had it in the back of my mind that I could print this one day. So I worked in print size of 300 DPI and then saved it down for the web.
That's the best thing to do. Like I think you've always got to have your mind on two sort of media, if you know what I mean. Yeah, because there may be a day where you want to collect it. Do you know what I mean?
I find you have to write slightly different for the web as opposed to, like for a book, you're going to get 24 pages done in one hit.
Yeah.
I find on the web, every page has to be self-contained.
Yeah, definitely.
And want you to get to the next one. So it almost has to be like mini cliffhangers on every page.
It's like
page.
A newspaper strip.
Much more like
panels. Yeah.
Much more like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
When I've had Vanguard, I've got a couple of Vanguard books printed, and then it reads, sometimes I don't like the way it reads because every page is like, oh God, move to the next page, move to the next page, whereas there's not like a couple that kind of flow together. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you still do Vanguard like issues though as well, don't you? That's also an important thing. It's not like one massive ongoing thing that will be collected in the graphic novel. You've got you have an issue one or chapter one or, you know, 2, 3, 4.
But is that to keep you sane? Is that so you can have start and end points and begin again? Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. It's kind of like, this is going to be told. They've got a big long story and this chunk is going to be told within this bit. And then the between issues has its own timeline of stuff happening. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So you can use that within the story.
Issue, I want to blast Vince in the eye.
Yeah.
Yeah, that happens, folks.
You finish a comic, you can like, right, the next issue is going to start 2 weeks down the line.
Yeah, it's almost like a breather, isn't it?
That's like a nice transition.
And we've said it before, like a lot of people read their webcomics in chunks. Do you know what I mean? They'll save 20 pages.
I do.
And
yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You know, I mean, sometimes it's quite daunting if it's a big ongoing story. And like the latest one is page 230. And you go back to the beginning, you're like, oh my God, this is, you know, quite an epic task. But if you can just do it in 20 page hits.
I mean, when we talk about people making their living from comics, you got people on, I'm not having a pop here, you got people on Patreon that are getting $2,000+ per page of their comic. And it's like, really? You're doing two pages out a week, you're sorted, you're fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And well, it's like, Dan, would you class that as having broken into the industry? I suppose you got it, haven't you, really, I suppose?
Yeah, I suppose you've got, well, it's not breaking into the industry, it's making money.
Yeah. I mean, because otherwise you could say that having a successful Kickstarter is breaking into the industry. It's a similar sort of thing, really. You know, people are paying for a certain product, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, it depends what you're using to sort of say...
Define industry.
Yeah, what that you're defining as being successful within the industry. If, you know, it means that you are, like Dan Slott, say, a name, or Scott Snyder, or, you know, Greg Capullo, names that people, you know, or Stan Lee even... You know, which is probably a better example. Are they like that? Well, the answer is no. But there's a lot of people with it who have found them on the internet, which may be a very dispersed group, all know who they are.
And let's face it, $2,000 for a page ain't bad. It ain't a bad page rate, is it?
That's an amazing page rate.
Yeah, Jesus.
It's just like, it's crazy. It's amazing.
Let me assure you, there are some regular punk. Publishers within the bigger end, the smaller end of the mainstream publishing that wouldn't be paying you that for an issue.
But it's different in regards to these people and the fact that they're kind of social media wizards. Like, it's not just the art, is not just the thing. They've got to handle keeping this buzz going continually, and then kind of constantly identifying what's working within their comic and then capitalize on that. Do you know what I mean? It's not just like they get $2,000 for producing a piece of art. There's a lot more they've got to do to kind of generate that kind
I'd
of stuff.
I'd say that they're more proper entrepreneurs, aren't they?
Big time, I'd say so.
You know, rather than sort of, you know, because you can be relatively successful and well-known within the comic book industry and still not take home 50 grand a year, dollars. Do you know what I mean? So that's... But,
it's weird, isn't it? I know the famous quote, isn't it, that's oft repeated, is the one by Mark Waid, who says that breaking into the comic industry is like breaking out of prison. Once somebody has done it in one way, you know, like someone's, you know, had a web comic or something like that and broken into it and started writing a comic, you know, then that way will be sealed up and it'll never happen again because they've been caught. You know, they'll have to think of another way to do it. And I think you see that so much. You look at all the different ways that people break in these days. You know, Kieran Gillen used to write... video game reviews and write for video game magazines and stuff, didn't he? And all different ways that people have done it.
You know, you can't be Grant Morrison's best friend and be Mark Miller. Do you know what I mean? You know, only he can do it like that.
Yeah, yeah. Or you know, you get lucky and you self-publish and then you're taken on board after that. And you know, it's all different. You know,
because there was that period in the 90s where. You know, if you were Jeff Smith suddenly, you know, or Terry Moore, you could appear to be relatively successful, you know, as self-publishers. Jeff Smith really was because he had, eventually became successful because he had a great deal with Scholastic rather than self-publishing. Right. But, you know, Terry Moore looked like he was going gangbusters through the roof with Strangers in Paradise, but apparently still wasn't selling much more when he was with Image.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it's perception, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, it really is these days, isn't it? You create, I hate to say it, but a lot of people create a personality before they create a product. And that sometimes grabs the attention for you. And you see that more and more on Twitter these days. People are hired because of that.
You get like professional wrestlers writing comics and stuff. And it's kind of like, that is kind of drawing in the fan base from one. I presume they're interchangeable and then pulling them over to writing comics.
I don't understand wrestling, but is it Punk or something? What's his name?
CM Punk, I think
he's writing a Marvel book at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah, he's doing Drax, isn't he?
Yeah. So, no, who thought that? Who thought, you know, I'll become a boxer so I can get into, you know, comic writing? Or, you know, it's just bizarre the way some people get in, isn't it?
Very bizarre. Can't have fault him for getting in that way. I mean, if that's what you want to do,
there's got to be a cosplayer somewhere who's broken in and become a, you know, there's got to be all sorts of things have got to have happened, haven't they?
Yeah, I'd put money on that, definitely.
Yeah.
But you look at all those Hollywood screenwriters that Marvel were hiring in the early 2000s, to do the X-Men or do this book or do that book. You know, they kind of did their thing, realised the comics paid for shit and ran away.
Yeah.
And also they didn't realise that they were going to be accountable to rabid fans.
Yeah. Always be aware that someone's going to read this stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, yeah.
We've mentioned this about small press. One of the strengths of the kind of the community, if you want to call that, is you can ask people questions. If you don't know about like the printing terms, the bleed, or what you got to do, especially if I've done projects with people, I ask them straight away, what's the spec size, blah, 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 blah. But there's really nice people out there will help you out if you kind of want to get involved with a project.
Yeah.
But you know what? It goes the same with the bigger guys as well. You know, people will talk to you about who it is that you should talk to.
Yeah.
What editors are worth talking to? Who has openings on their books? You know, who's looking for submissions? Or you know, how do we get around a company not having submissions? You know, how do you get to work for them?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this is all stuff that that people will talk about. You know, I'm more than happy to talk to people about, you know, routes in and what they should work on and that sort of stuff.
And why they shouldn't talk to Tony.
Yeah, he's dealt with that anyway.
Yeah, because he takes notes when you talk.
Listen, I won't repeat the story you told me about how you had the furry suite at London Zoo.
But you just have.
To be honest, do you think we're going to reach a saturation point? Do you think we're going to reach a saturation point where everyone who is a fan of comics is getting into comics? And we need the people who aren't the fans of comics to get in. We need the weirdos. You know, we need the people who, you know, have got other ideas. It seems to be we're almost trotting around the same. So somebody will come in and they say, oh, I really like Grant Morrison and Matt Fraction. And you know what you're going to get, don't you, immediately.
But hasn't it been like that since Roy Thomas joined Marvel?
It has, yeah. Probably has, with a few rare exceptions, you know. Do we need that moment where, you know, I mean, Marvel was created off the back of a lot of people, you know, who'd come back from war, hadn't they, almost, you know?
Yeah.
Do we need that thing where, we, you know, screenwriters don't count, as far as I'm concerned, because they're still popular writing popular culture. Do we need the sort of off-the-wall people to say, look, why aren't we doing this? Why aren't we doing that? You know, it seems like everyone is either a creator and a fan. You know, we're four people sitting here. I'm the least of all, but I've made comics, you know?
Mm.
It's a weird time, I think.
I know what you mean, yeah. It's an interesting one.
But I almost feel that it's always been thus, you know, that since you and I have been reading comics, Tony. You
know, I definitely think so. I just think it's a cycle that's begun and comics is shrinking now, and I think we need that, you know, an injection of something fresh sometimes.
It's interesting because it's shrinking, but it's booming.
But I do think because of all the film and TV stuff, we're seeing people coming to the industry that we wouldn't have seen without it. You know, who bring their, you know, you and I might not approve, do you know what I mean? Because they don't feel like real fans.
I know. But see, we say that all the time, don't we? But who's that guy who's writing Deadpool, who's a comedy writer?
Jerry Duggan.
Yeah, see, I like his stuff. And
he's great.
Automatically someone that I would have gone to, you know. I just see all these... I suppose what's given me the real irk about it is a few people who they sort of blur the lines between being comics journalists and being comics writers, and it all seems a little bit predictable.
Okay,
you know, there's the whole thing about I don't care about these people off Bleeding Cool getting a job with some company, but it seems to be, and then there was that little bit of, you know, someone from a podcast started working for Image Comics, and you know, it all seemed a bit glad-handing and a bit of a circular sort of route, and it would just seem to sort of rotate constantly.
But yeah, at least the last one you can't say, because this is one of those things that irks me when I get told that it's a boys' club, and you can only get in if you know if you drink in the bars with these editors and things like that. Because you know that's not my experience. I didn't get in like that.
Mm. But people do, though, don't you think?
I think you get people who might get considered for jobs because they're around and they're there. But that would have happened back when people used to hang out at the bullpen or hung around at Neil Adams' studio. I think that was much more rife in the 70s and 80s than it is now. You know, if you only have to look at the sort of people that are being employed to do all new Marvel and how different that stuff is. You know, it almost looks like they've gone, oh, look, Boom are doing nice, interesting comics. Let's get a load of people who do work that's like that on on our superhero books. And there is a blurring of the lines between, you know, what we would have thought of as cutesy indie books and superhero books now.
Yeah.
There's a big blurring of the lines now. You've only got to look at that Superman book that came out this week.
Yeah, absolutely. And Squirrel Girl and things like that.
I find it odd that the industry doesn't. It seems to be like creatively stronger than it's ever been, but then like with the decline in sales, it doesn't. I find it hard to.
But are we seeing declining sales? Because I don't think we are.
Okay, I can only go of what I'm reading.
It's also the fact that the digital numbers are never really really.
Digital is extremely healthy. Let me assure you, and the numbers that you see on ICV2 and on Bleeding Cool and all of those places don't take any are only North American initial orders from Diamond. They're not anything more than a snapshot of the initial orders, but just in North America. Yeah, this is one of those things that drives me nuts, because it's fans with too little information feeling that they have the keys to the kingdom and can tell you exactly how things are selling.
Yeah,
you know, it's why it's damaging when somebody like Bleeding Cool prints these things and goes, "Oh, that book's near close to the chop," and people go, "Oh, well, I'm not going to buy it then." You know, and it could be very healthy sales. Yeah. Not Omega Men. OMAC died because of that.
Right. Well, Omega Men almost went, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, thankfully, that had the opposite effect, because people were like, "No, this is great. Let's keep it around." But remember when OMAC started with the New 52, and it was really popular, got good word, but suddenly the sales figures didn't look so amazing when they were reported, and people were, "Oh, that's deadly." And I can remember Bleeding Cool pretty much killed that off.
That went after issue 8 or something, didn't it?
Yeah, and on a forum I was on, somebody who was on there, you know, let fly about Bleeding Cool something chronic because of that, because they basically lost their job because it was reported out of business.
That sucks.
Yeah, and this is the problem when you have what purports to be lots of information when it's incorrect.
So where do we think the most interesting stuff's happening now? If you were, Mark, if you were an editor and you had to choose somewhere to look for, you know, to look to for the next wave of stuff. You know, where would you go?
God, I think genuinely Boom's a good place to look before you go to Image, you know, because I don't think Image is where you're seeing anything new and exciting. That's where people who have big careers are going now.
Right.
You know, whereas maybe 5 years ago you'd get books that were by people that you hadn't heard of and you think, oh, this is exciting, you know, like Prophet, say.
Yeah.
You know, books which people were raving about with creators that they maybe hadn't heard of, because, you know, King City wasn't a massive book at that point. You know, but I think Boom and First Second and places like that are probably where you're seeing what's going to come up in terms of Marvel and DC now.
Yeah. I mean, you often see now, you see it on Twitter, don't you, small press people, you know, asking where's a good place to pitch, you know. And I often see people say Boom. Do you think that's a leaping on point to jump from a small press book
to make? Yeah, absolutely. Because you know, they're a young, hungry company. Like I would say IDW, but they do much more in the way of licensing work. But when they do something that is creator owned, or something that they're going to be doing in you know, on that a similar sort of basis, you know, they tend to put out interesting stuff. You know, it used to be that you'd look at somebody like Slave Labor or Fantagraphics, but unfortunately those two just don't seem to be putting out the books anymore.
Yeah. Okay. What's the company Chris Darros is from? I can't. Top Shelf.
Oh, Top Shelf. Well, that's. God, who are they with now? Isn't that?
Is it Fantagraphics? Oh, you might be right. I can't remember now.
Or is it IDW they're with?
Right. You see, that was always an interesting place to pitch to as well, because they had quite a wide, diverse sort of
absolutely
books. You know. Yeah, interesting. And he was always at Bristol. You used to see him at Bristol, didn't you, Chris Darros? He used to come over here quite a lot, I think. Okay. See, I think there's almost two different strands. There's a number of different strands, but I think certain books, certainly some of the books that perhaps I'm more likely to review, you know, some of the small press stuff, they all look to somewhere like Nobrow, for example. And they'll see that as the pinnacle of where their style should be heading, you know. And they've got an awful lot of fresh talent, you know, awful lot of interesting stuff going on in both all ages with their Flying Eye books and with the sort of more adult stuff with their, you know, 11 times 17 or whatever it is.
I bet you Boom are looking at their stuff.
Cherry pick from there. Yeah. Even books like Hilda and stuff like that, I think, you know, like the sort of Moomins type stuff that they're doing. I can see.
Absolutely. Because those sort of collections would go very well with Kaboom and all of that sort of.
Yeah.
And Boombox and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So if you were going to make the leap, Mark, for example, you're going to make the leap, say, how would you do it? So you've got a small press book, you've maybe four issues, it's had a good little bit of word of mouth in the sort of small press table circuit. What would be your first step there?
So, I'd reach out via social media to, like, Twitter is a really good place, and find out who the editors are of these companies like Boom or even Dynamite, IDW, cultivate a relationship with these people. I mean, I know that sounds like it's difficult, but actually, you know, they're looking for stuff, so it's part of an editor's remit.
Yeah,
you know, not so much. You know, obviously not at Marvel and DC, it doesn't work like that, but. Those smaller companies, it certainly does.
Yeah. What about Vertigo? What's your opinion? Do you think that would be a good place to go with certain books?
It's really tough because, again, you're talking about a big company. You know, they appear to be not DC, but they are DC.
Right.
You know, and, you know, looking at the way the and knowing the editors, the way the editors think there's, they are looking for fairly established work. They would have looked at people who were on books elsewhere. So, I mean,
yeah. I mean, you and I both know, although we can't say who, you and I both know that there's someone from the small press who's going there soon, don't we?
Yes, yeah.
You know, and I think that's a brilliant choice to make.
Oh, totally. Yeah. But that would have been through seeing a well-produced book.
Mm. Yeah.
Or books, you know, that look beautiful.
Yeah.
Before you even get to that point, do you know what I mean?
So would you say, like, someone who just kind of sits at home, kind of does a comic, but doesn't do small press, the idea of them kind of trying to go for a job at Marvel or DC is like you've got your work cut out for you, if you've got even got a chance?
Well, I think the thing is, you can't look at Marvel and DC and expect to work for them unless your work looks like it should be there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Too many people would, you know, back in the day, you'd sort of go, well, my work's as good as Al Milgram's, you know, or whoever else wasn't a popular artist. Well, that's not the point. They want your work to be as good as John Buscema's, you know. It's,
yeah.
You know, so never aim for the middle, always aim for the top for whatever you're doing.
Mm.
Right.
Do you see what I mean?
You see as more of a ladder these days, do you think?
Oh, it really is because, I mean, when I worked for Vertigo through the early 2000s, and when I came back, it was like, well, I know I can't go straight back there and go, hey, I'm back. You have to pay your dues all over again, you know.
Yeah.
So you know, I did a small press book, which ended up as a digital only thing in the end, rather than being published. But I think because I'd started pushing pages out of that online and on my blog and stuff, people were seeing that I was creating work and, you know, you were doing, you know, what looked like a couple of pages a day. So you look reliable and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going back to what we said on the Creating a Buzz episode, isn't it? If it's good, that's the most attractive thing about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, quality will out. And it really is that thing of, you know, get a good colorist, get a good letterer. You know, if these are things you can't do, get somebody who's really good at doing them.
Because it makes your work shine.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, because comics in the end is a team game, you know, and also just learn how to work within a team.
Yeah.
That's like really important.
That comic, the Archetype one last week, like the cover was okay, but with Sean Dove's colors on it, it shone.
I agree with you 100% around that, mate. Yeah.
Yeah.
The colors with that were great. Yeah. Even if it was Dobes, and I can't help but compliment him.
I would pitch in like the kind of constantly working at your craft and trying to improve your craft.
Absolutely. Never be happy with what you do.
Yeah.
And if you keep on looking kind of like to the distance of, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, you're only keeping half your focus on what you're doing now. I would say focus on the now, get that strong and up to speed, and then the rest should come a lot easier.
I mean, you know, don't be thinking, you know, as you start your small press book, and this will be coming out from Marvel.
Yeah.
You know, you're just going to be unhappy at the end of the day if you feel think like that.
Have faith in your own ideas and what you're doing, and the most important thing is just do it.
You know, 100%. How do you get into comics? Make them.
It's like earlier when I was. I don't know if you knew your mic was on, Mark, but I could hear some sort of rustling coming from your end of the phone just before we started recording, and then all I heard was just the word guns like that. Dreaming about someone probably helps, doesn't it?
It really does.
Yeah. You let a bit of dream like.
So essentially, what we're saying about creating comics is no one way to get in. When there is that way, that's gone. It's kind of.
I'm going to tattoo a comic on myself and then try and get in that way. That's got to work, isn't it?
Oh, give
it
dear. A go.
But you know, but the truisms of, you know, it isn't what you know, it's who you know is true. And so do get to know these editors, you know, talk to them on Twitter. You know, even if you're starting out being a fan, you'll be noticed, you know, but don't be an idiot. Again, you know, don't be a dick.
I've got the name for this episode then. Don't be a dick.
There you go.
Future career ruined, isn't it?
So, folks, if you want to make comics, make comics, cultivate relationships, do your research. That I can't stress how important that is.
Yeah.
And I hope
don't burn your bridges as well is another thing.
Yeah, very important.
Yeah, Dan. Yeah. Dan.
What?
Don't burn your bridges.
I didn't name them.
Kill them. Dan, we'll just kill them, mate. It'd be fine.
Yeah.
I didn't name anyone.
Look, you're with us now. You're in our gang now, so you know we'll look after your son.
The Burn Bridges Society.
Oh, like Nash Bridges.
Oh, dear God.
Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
Oh, dear God. Anyway, do we have any events this week?
Not many. You've got a couple. John Allison, who we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, who you know, Mark, don't you?
Oh, I do know John. He's a terrific bloke.
Yeah. He's got a new book coming out called Giant Days, and the launch is going to be at Gosh Comics on the 20th of November.
I love the look of that. Nice. The covers and stuff look brilliant on that.
It's great. It's a collection of his webcomic, which you can see at badmachinery.com, I think it is, which is just great.
Yeah. And he contacted the pod after we spoke about his last one, which is really nice of him.
Cool.
Yeah. The 12th of December is the Cardiff Independent Comic Expo, which is a smaller version, am I right in saying, Vince, of the previous event, is that right?
Yes, the one that happened in June. It's the same people, just I think it was an overwhelming success and they just wanted to go back for another slice of fun. Unfortunately, I can't make it.
Right. It's described itself as the December Showcase event. It's at Cardiff Masonic Hall, so you'll know where that is, Dan.
Where's Cardiff?
Get your handshake ready.
Between 10 a.m.
It was there. It was there in June, and like, it's worth going there just to see the strange photos of old men in frames that are on the wall.
Yeah, it's awesome. Right. There's a bit of that going on in Melksham where we went in that little town hall, all the old mayors up the
Old Mayors.
Yeah, Old Mayors of Melksham, wherever the fuck it was.
Lady friend of yours, Vince, got stuck in the toilet and won't tell us what happened. Just right next to her, where all the pictures were. Anyway, this event is Chris Welsh, Lou Scannon, that's not a person, Sarah Millman, Stiffs are there, Hellbound Media, and Anastasia Catriss, who we really must get on soon because we speak about her occasionally, don't we?
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Yeah, so that's just the two events, mate, and obviously everything else has passed over this last weekend. Oh, it was terribly embarrassing, and it all went well. So
the things Tony did and just said...
So sexy.
They were sickening. They were... There were tears. There was
probably restraining orders, I heard.
Yeah. There were Mark's, probably some... Mark's run out of Duracell batteries for his furry bunnies that he surrounds himself with in the furry suite.
That's quite true. As well as the dogs as well. You know, the ones that yap and then bounce in the air.
You've
I like
ones
them.
That wipe their bum along the carpet, haven't you? You like those ones too.
Which Tony will also do if you give him
for money.
Yeah.
Without prompting, actually.
As we're talking now, people are probably remembering the time that he went through the Thought Bubble teepee completely on his arse.
For 5 good pounds.
Oh,
I've got a quick announcement. I'm currently drawing an 8-page kind of mini comic for the site OurSupermum.com.
Yeah.
And it's called Across the Pond. It's where an American superhero comes to Britain, and I've tried to make all the British characters talk like Danny Dyer. So,
Danny Dyer.
My own amusement. They're all like Gould and bloody hell and all that kind of
stuff. I need to mug him off all the time. He gets mugged off non-stop.
What are you doing?
And doesn't he think his daughter's bedroom's haunted or something? He was saying on Jonathan Ross the other day.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
Yeah, he moved out of his house, didn't he? Because he thought it was haunted.
Yeah. Someone told me... might be the same reason I think Mark's bedroom's haunted, because I keep hearing him shout guns.
Someone said that Danny Dyer dubbed a load of Bond clips, or someone's used Danny Dyer clips.
Oh my God, I need to look this up.
Gotta look that up. That sounds hilarious.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I was going to start a project where I just changed a load of movie posters to have Danny Dyer in them.
You changed quite a good movie poster this week.
Did I?
Yeah, to picture me.
Oh yeah. If only people could see it. No. But I think I might post on Facebook the Danny Dyer poster I did. So,
that'd be good.
Oh, you should.
It's one I was quite proud of.
Someone I work with appeared in not in the film with Danny Dyer, but in a Danny Dyer film. It's called The Devil's Playground, and at the beginning it's like a zombie thing. There's all this kind of frosted glass with these people thrashing about on hospital cots. She was one of those people.
Lovely.
Classic movie.
He knows all the best people, does Butch.
Yeah. He's dropping names all over the place.
Yeah. He's a name dropper, Burn Bridger.
He's a dreamer, he's a schemer, and he was once on Arena.
Are there any other shout outs before we go to recommendations?
Oh, Adrian Hashimi, who's a friend of mine and Mark's, New York comic artist and storyboarder. He's Adrian Hashimi. com. He's sent me some of his comics. He's doing a sort of historical action comic about Malaysia, and he's really good.
I must see this.
Oh, it's really good. And he also does a series of prints called On the Throne, which are famous,
which are genius,
which is just famous ladies doing a poo. So there's Princess Leia,
Uhura,
and who's the other one? Oh, is it Daenerys? I don't know, I understand Game of Thrones, but that lady
is Targaryen.
Yeah, yeah, they're all sitting on the toilet. So it's called On the Throne. They're quite cool, actually. Quite cool. Something.
Nice.
Good.
That sounds great.
That's all for me. Mark, you got any shout-outs?
Just the comics and coffee guys. So Matt, Alex, Chris, you. That'll do.
And we're missing Alex this weekend. He's not coming up with us, is he? So that's a shame.
Oh, dear.
Last weekend. Oh, shit.
time, what a slippery bitch.
We did miss him.
Yeah, I really missed him.
All right. Well, he did make a surprise appearance, but what was he dressed like, guys? Yeah. Oh, my word.
He was a furry.
With fiery nipple tassels.
And a Dalek head.
Yeah. It's a bit concerning he'd stripped from the waist down. But...
but was wearing moon boots.
Yeah. After that incident with security, I don't think he'd ever be allowed back in there.
And he shouted William Shatner out very loudly. I don't know.
Oh, dear.
I don't know if I can tell that story. It might be too.
No, you can't tell that story.
You can't, no.
I'll tell it anyway. Yeah. I was away on holiday with some friends, and we were teenagers, and there was a sort of divide door between us. And me and my mate had agreed, we were with our girlfriends at the time, who I am no longer in contact with. You may be surprised to hear.
I am not surprised at all.
And at the point of the final point of the exciting part of this story is, or the final part of the event, we were each going to shout a name out, me and him, because we thought it was funny. And all I heard him shout out was, "Tom Baker," like this really loudly. And I started laughing so much I couldn't continue. And the lady I was with punched me.
Well,
yeah, it's quite a beautiful story, that.
Oh, I'll tell you,
I was going to shout William Shatner, but I didn't get a chance to.
I'll tell you what, that was quite romantic. It's like, yeah, it's like The Notebook.
Jesus. That lightened the mood, didn't it?
Yeah. Or, as I like to call it, completely ruined another one.
Yeah, because we're near the end, you see. I like to say something ridiculous at the end and ruin it. It's like you when you started talking about pooing on people's heads that time we had a lady on, Vince. That went wrong.
Well, you know, it's know your audience. If I think I can get away with it, I'm going to say it.
Just gamble it at the end.
Yeah, I mean.
Speaking of gambles, what do you want to recommend, Tony?
Well, I've been reading an all ages book called Airboy. It's about a little boy there.
Is that the ones where they get all sex off a transgender prostitute?
Yeah, it's not really all ages, to be fair. I made that bit up. Yeah. Basically, it's written by James Robinson, art by Greg Hinkle. It's absolutely brilliant. Fourth issue came out today. Yeah, last week, pardon me. And it's not the Airboy, if you remember the Airboy of the Golden Age of comics or the Eclipse series. We talked about Eclipse earlier, didn't we? It's not that one. It's basically a breakdown. It's kind of like a breakdown in a comic by James Robinson, who at the time was sort of a bit fed up with his life, and he'd just finished working for DC and didn't really enjoy it. This is nothing that isn't said in the comic, by the way, so I'm not giving away any secrets. He'd made a movie that he wasn't really happy the way it went. He was happy with the movie, but the reception of it wasn't too great. And he'd written League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which was obviously ripped to pieces a bit, wasn't it? And he came back to comics, and he got given the job of writing Airboy, which is this sort of classic character, sort of wartime fighter pilot who flies a special plane, has a little group, and they fight Nazis and all this sort of thing. But he decided, no, I'm not going to write that. I'm going to turn it into a story about my mental breakdown, how I get hold of an artist who's Greg plays himself in the comic with a huge manhood throughout nearly all of it. And then they snort some what they think is cocaine and turns out to be heroin. And they have this, we're not sure, is it a hallucination? We're not sure, but they meet Airboy. He appears in front of them, and they're transported to the world of Airboy, where they have to dress up as Nazis and fight some giant robots. And it's four issues of absolute brilliance. It ends, I won't ruin it, but it ends so well. It's
Be my comic of the year. It's flipping fantastic.
I'm going to say a little bit Wizard of Oz. If Wizard of Oz had transsexual women blowing you in public toilets and quite a lot of hard drugs. You know, it's
That's one way to get a brain.
That's the yellow brick road. But yeah, so it's really well done. It's four issues, and it's told in four issues and done. The art is amazing. The art is super detailed. James Robinson and Greg Hinkle appear in kind of blue wash, black and white as well, and all the other characters, the sort of heroic characters of Airboy and all these sort of are in full bright colour throughout, and it's really well done. I know that Mark had a table next to James Robinson last year at New York, and we talked to him a bit about it. And basically all he would say is, this isn't what you think. This is not going to be anything like what you think it's going to be. And it wasn't. And it's also basically a look into James Robinson's mind, and it's done so well. Yeah, really, really worth looking at. And I mentioned it way back on episode one, I think.
It's extraordinarily honest, isn't it? You know,
yeah, it's painfully honest. Yeah, he really bares his chest in it. But it's funny as well. It's absolutely hilarious.
Is that, I presume that should be collected as a trade at some point.
Yeah, you would think it must be quite soon. I think they come out quite soon, don't they? Yeah. Image. But
I'd love to get that. Yeah.
Yeah, well worth it, mate. You'll love it. It's really good.
Cool. It's just brilliant because, I mean, at one, you know, at some points it's absolutely gut-bustingly funny, and others it's completely heartbreaking. You know, really
tragic moments to it, especially around his wife and stuff. He talks about a failed relationship he's got, and it's incredibly sad. Yeah, but it's like beat poetry put in a comic with a lot of robots. You know,
cool.
Nice.
It's that good.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about you, Dan? What have you got?
I've been listening to an audiobook by Dan Abnett called Horus Rising. I'm not really into kind of all that Warhammer kind of stuff, but I've found out it's from that. I'll read you a little bit of blurb. After 1,000 years of expansion and conquest, the human Imperium is at its height. His dreams for humanity accomplished, the Emperor hands over the reins of power to his war master Horus and heads back to Terra. But is Horus strong enough to control his fellow commanders and continue the Emperor's grand design, or will such power completely corrupt him? And it's, if you like kind of military sci-fi men blowing shit up, it's your cup of tea. So I listen to audiobooks when I'm drawing. Usually I find it a lot more easier than music to do. And this one's a good listen. So check it out.
Quite epic as well, those books, aren't they? It's quite long.
There's loads of them as well, aren't there? My son read a load of them. Yeah, bundles of them, aren't there?
It's like 10 hours, this one. So
right.
Nice, that'll keep you going. A few more pages of Vanguard.
It's weird when you kind of listen to audiobooks. I'm listening, but the hands are doing their work, doing the drawing, and they're kind of the two separate things working as one. There you go.
Yes, Dan can do several things at once. That was his roundabout way of saying I draw while I listen to audiobooks.
Yeah.
The hands are doing things.
He's cutting carrots with his toes.
I should update listeners on the drawing guy with the kids on the train.
Yeah.
Yesterday morning I got on the train and the kids were there and they said, "Oh yeah, like stand next to him." Like, and that's I thought, "Fuck you." I'm not your performing monkey, so I didn't draw. I waited till I got off and then did it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be that guy.
Yeah, no one tells Dan what to do. Yeah, no one tells Dan what to do, even if you are 14. Yeah. Fuck you, teenagers. Fuck you.
Fuck you, I said in my head.
You got to put that on your business card now, mate.
Oh dear. So Horus Rising, the audiobook.
Yes.
Very good for when you're shaking your hands about and making comments. I'd like to recommend a book that I've been meaning to recommend for a couple of weeks actually, and that's Sentient Zombie Space Pigs.
Awesome title.
By the guys at Disconnected Press, written by Lizzie Boyle and art by Connor Boyle, both of whom are fans of the show and very supportive of us. And this book's amazing. I'm such a fan of this book. It's the first ever entry into the farmyard apocalypse genre. You know how massive that genre is?
Yeah.
Basically, it's the story how an alien comes to Earth and first contact, and he lands on a redneck farm. But instead of it being a wonderful thing, the farmer just shoots the alien, and to get rid of the body, throws it in with his pigs. And the pigs just yummy down on it, and then they just basically turn into bloodthirsty monsters. And it sets off...
Yummy down?
Yes, I did use the word yummy down.
Yummy down.
I know you've used those words before, Tony, but this is a completely different situation.
What was it you said earlier? Bitty milk. I don't like
that. That's what you've been trying to message us on Skype.
Bitty milk.
I'm having none of it.
Along with nom nom nom.
Yeah, who says that, eh?
Tony Esmond is literally a character from Little Britain.
Oh, don't say that. Although I did fall over and my penis went in someone.
And now he has a son.
Who listens to this show?
Anyway, Sentient Zombie Space Pigs. One of the lines is "Welcome to the apocalypse," and I love a play on words, and this is rife with them.
Yeah.
Each issue is 20 pages of story. It's beautiful black and white art from Connor, who is actually one of my favourite artists, sort of toiling away on the small press scene. He draws the nastiest looking pig you will ever see. Like, seriously, these things are fat and they've got massive ears and they look monstrous and they've got like big dark eyes. They look like they can mess you up. And that would be reason enough to pick it up. But the art is backed up by a cracking, or should I say crackling? No? Fucking hell. Jesus Christ.
Tough crowd. 400 people just turned off. No, hang on. Yeah. We never get that many. Four people just turned off.
And in his head, Dan was like, fuck you.
Yeah. You know, if you held a microphone up to his head, that's all you get.
Yeah. anyway, yeah, it's got a brilliant script by Lizzie Boyle. It's got great dialogue and sort of pacing, and they know exactly what the genre is, and the use of cliches, etc., is just masterful. I love Lizzie's work, so definitely keep your eye out for these guys at conventions. They're always about. They're also criminally nice and articulate, so they had me at hello from day one. It's clearly a comic done for the fun and love of comics. It's silly, yet somehow better and more poignant than most other zombie apocalypse tales, because it is that, you know, you could say it's a zombie apocalypse sort of story, only done with pigs instead of instead of zombies. And there's so many of those sort of like zombie apocalypse sort of tales about, but this one's definitely worth checking out. The characters are great, and there's a pig who doesn't seem to be as brutally evil as his porky cousins, so there's a bit of a mystery playing out too. It knows what it wants to be, what it wants to do, and absolutely kills it. Yeah, they launched issues 3 and 4 at Thought Bubble this previous weekend. And Tony's trying to put me off through Skype, as he always does. But I'm not going to fall for it, because I'm a grown human being. you can get all the issues from the Disconnected Press website for the ridiculous price of £1 per issue. That's £1 per issue. I can't believe they offer it for £1. Of course, because of stuff being posted, etc., they're selling them in packs of two or four. But how in the whole blue cheesy Christmas can you turn down 80 pages of pig-based apocalypse nonsense for just £4? I do not know. It's well worth checking out. And they call their all four issues The Whole Hog. I love a pig-based pun, which is probably why I'm friends with Tony. Yeah, and you can get it all from disconnectedpress.wordpress.com, or you can also get the issues from comicsy.co.uk/disconnectedpress. So, Sentient Zombie Space Pigs, it's amazing, and I think everyone should get it. So there cool. You go.
Awesome, mate.
What about you, Mark?
I've got a recommendation. It's this small press book called Asterix and the Missing Scroll. I don't know if any of you have heard
that, then.
Asterix. It's flipping excellent. It's like the first book in years and years and years and years under the new team they've got working on it. And it's brilliant. It's all those things you loved about the Asterix books if you read them as a kid. But it's tackling sort of lies within the press and social media in this one.
As you do.
Which is very cleverly done, because basically Caesar has written his history of his conquering of Europe, but they're conveniently trying to cut out the chapter about the fact that Gaul resisted, or one small village in Gaul resisted. So they take this out, you know, in terms of spinning the thing, but somebody runs off with that chapter, and of course it gets into the hands of the Gauls, and you know, hijinks ensue. But it's excellent. It really is. And there's some great jokes about Wi-Fi providers and things like that and all sorts of things. It's fantastic. Really is. Brilliant. Very reminiscent. I don't know if you any of you read Asterix in Britain, but it's very...
No, I've not read one for years, actually.
I haven't read one since probably school, since primary school.
Yeah, me too, actually. Yeah.
Oh, God.
I don't think they need
that much,
do they?
No, I don't know.
Did we all just get judged by Mark Lamming?
I had just written furries on the Skype, though, just to see if I...
Oh, dear. God.
But, yeah, honestly, it's excellent. And if you want something for your stocking for Christmas, that's the book. It's great.
Awesome. You can get that from Amazon, I guess.
Yeah, Amazon, all good bookshops.
And do they still do them in those nice sort of like old European sort of hardbacks?
They do. Listen.
Oh, brilliant.
There you go.
Hang on, but what about the book? Oh, Oh, it's too good to pass up.
No, I mean, yeah, excellent. And you'd never notice that it was a different art team. I mean, it's almost like a love letter to the old books.
Ooh. Nice. And that's the first time we've had Asterix mentioned on this show. So trust the former teacher to bring that one out.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah. Yes. And you wouldn't know it, folks, by listening to this, but we're currently having to deal with...
Listen, right, this is the best day ever because I just found a woman with green skin as an emoji on Skype.
Oh, oh dear. Mark is never coming back.
Mark, yeah. Apparently snipping that picture.
Yeah.
Mark, I hate Tony.
Yeah, we all do, it's fine. You know, this is part of like our community service, having to have him on the show. In it, Dan.
Oh, Dan, don't join them. Don't.
No, no.
Come to the dark side, Dan. Come on. Come over.
In his head, you know what he's saying. Oh,
yeah. I was just flicking through some of those emojis, see which one I could get, but no, I'll leave it. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I was listening to you, Mark, so that's all right, isn't it?
Oh, no, yeah. I didn't.
We can multitask, me and Dan.
As mentioned previously in the episode.
Thank you. Yes, yeah. Paying attention, you see.
Yeah, Tony can draw cock pictures and talk.
Hey, I'm the only somebody sent me a cock picture on Twitter recently, and it was Vince. What did you write? Oh, look at me. My name's Tony. I've got loads of comic art, and you drew a penis.
No, right, because you were showing off about the original artwork that you had. So I drew you an original piece, which was a man, and I'm so sorry that you have to know about this, folks, but this is the sort of childish person I am, a man with a penis for a head saying, "Oh, look at me, Tony, put me in your mouth." And what was Tony's reply? I want that.
I did. Bit of original art, wasn't it?
Oh dear.
Right, good. Nice.
Oh, I feel dirty and used. Yes, thanks for joining us, Mark, and thank Cheers, you, Mark. People, for listening to us for Rabbit On for the last like 90 minutes or so. Hope you enjoyed it. I hope you gleaned some information from it. Hope you found out about more books that you go out and check out. It's wonderful when we hear that people have checked out books.
Yeah.
If you've got anything you want to tell us about or what you thought about this episode, there's several different ways you can do it. You can email us, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, if you've got books or events, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Don't send any lewd pictures on there.
Please don't.
Just... Actually, I don't care. That's not the email I keep an eye on.
You'll regret it, Tony. You'll regret it.
Not on earth more than to you, Mr. Lemming.
Choice cuts.
Oh, dear. And you can follow us on Twitter at The Awesome Pod. We've had a lot of interaction on Twitter recently, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
Check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And thank you for checking us out on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. And likewise, if you've listened to us on iTunes, thank you for doing so. And leave us a cheeky little review, you know, as many stars as you can possibly muster. We've had some very kind words said recently. And
we did, yeah. Got excited about one this week, didn't we?
Yes. Very good indeed. It made our day. So there you go, folks. Thank you once again for joining us, Mark. For this,
my pleasure.
Jake through the world of comics and what they hold in store for all of us. So, and thank you for putting up for Tony with Tony for another 90 minutes.
Do it all the time.
I have to do it all the time. I'm growing a third skin at the moment.
Yeah. What's the next skin? I ask myself.
Tony's growing a third leg.
Christ.
Oh dear, it's always the last 20 minutes, isn't it?
It is.
It's the last 20 minutes that go horribly like post-watershed.
That's the only bit I listen to back.
Anyway, where can they catch us on Twitter, Mr. Esmond?
I'm at Ezoyes, Ezohyez, or you can find me at downthetubes.net.
Brilliant. What about you, Dan?
Yes, on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Brilliant. What about you, Mark?
You can find me on Twitter. It's monkey_mark, and I've got a blog somewhere, and I'm on Tumblr as well. just put in Monkey Mark or Mark Laming, it will come up.
Brilliant. And you can find me on Twitter at Jester Diablo and find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com. So thank you for listening, folks. As always, keep an eye out for the next episode, because Lord knows what that's whether that's going to be a special full of audio. If I can do anything with the audio that Tony's
it's
got, going to
be not just me. Emily's as bad as me.
We're going to have a special guest roving reporter, but we'll reveal all about that in due time. Well, we haven't said our full name.
That's true.
Well, we can just bleep it out. Yeah. No, I won't. That involves editing.
I'm not going to edit it, am I? Fucking hell.
Yeah. Yeah. On that note, folks, thank you for listening. Have a brilliant week. And from Dan, Tony, Mark, and myself, stay awesome.
Bye.
I like that one. I'm so tired. I just don't give a fuck.
I've been trying to do the same character sketch for the whole time we've done this, and it's just it's gone from bad to shit.
Let's do Danny Dyer comics.
I'm sure he'd license it to us.
Probably would for Fiverr.
Danny Dyer kicks a tramp to death.
Oh, I love a play on words, mate. I love a play on words. You keep saying that. You said that last week as well. I love a play on words.
Because I love a play on words. Tony Esmond is a... How's that for a play on words?
Oh, no.